Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Another four Alaskans have died of COVID-19. The State Department of Health and Social Services describes the deaths as recent and lists the individuals as a Juneau woman in her 60s, an Anchorage man in his 80s, an Anchorage man in his 70s, and an Anchorage woman in her 20s. The additional fatalities bring the total number of Alaskans known to have died from COVID-19 to 64. Three staffers in Governor Mike Dunleavy's office have tested positive for the virus. Alaska Public Media reports that an employee in the governor's Anchorage office felt sick last weekend and tested positive for coronavirus, prompting a round of tests Tuesday for employees from the governor's and lieutenant governor's offices in the city. According to a statement from the governor's office, two more employees tested positive, but both Dunleavy's and Lieutenant Governor Kevin Myers' results came back negative. The governor's office did not provide additional details about who tested positive or how closely they work with the governor. The statement says the office is putting in place standard protocols to prevent further cases and is letting staff members who can work from home. The governor's office says the employee who first tested positive is now in good health and quarantined at home. Meanwhile, the Department of Health and Social Services announced 143 new Alaska resident cases yesterday. Among the cases confirmed as of Tuesday night were 89 in Anchorage, 11 in Fairbanks, 4 each in the Nome Census Area in Utqiagvik, 2 in North Pole, and 1 in the Northwest Arctic Borough. There was also a single new non-resident case in Anchorage. This pushes Alaska's pandemic-long resident case count past 10,000 and the total non-resident case tally to over 1,000. There are currently 40 diagnosed COVID-19 patients hospitalized in Alaska, with another 16 awaiting test results. 7 patients are on ventilators. A Delta Junction woman with lung disease says she was mistreated and manhandled Saturday by Alaska Airlines personnel and Fairbanks International Airport police as they were removing her from a plane because she refused to wear the type of face covering the airline requires. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Judy Ferguson said she just settled in Saturday for a flight to Seattle, where she was to talk with her doctor about treatment of her pulmonary fibrosis. She wore an N95 mask and visor while boarding, then changed into a respirator helmet, which looks sort of like what firefighters wear in a burning building, when she was approached by an Alaska Airlines employee.
The agent told me to take off my respirator helmet. I told him I'm 75. I have lung fibrosis, which is terminal. I'm going to critical appointments in Seattle at the University of Washington Medical Center, and I will not remove my ventilator helmet.
Ferguson says she was trying to explain to the man, who she was told was a gate agent, that her respirator helmet was safer than the surgical mask that he was insisting that she wear. Those are the light blue fabric face coverings that, along with similarly designed cloth masks, complies with Alaska Airlines' mandatory face mask policy. But she says the agent gave her only a minute or so to explain before calling his supervisor.
The lead gate agent came and she said, "I will not talk to you on this airplane. You have to get off the airplane and talk to me." So she said 6 times, "Get off the plane. That's the only way I will talk to you." And she never did talk to me.
By then, Ferguson said she'd removed her helmet and put the N95 and visor back on. She said she tried to explain to the agents that the N95 didn't have exhalation vents, so she wouldn't exhale viruses and put fellow passengers at risk of contracting COVID-19. She also tried to explain that she'd been told by Alaska Airlines personnel that that type of N95 complied with the policy, and that she was told by a doctor at UW Medical Center that surgical masks offer only limited protections.
She told me that a surgical mask or a cloth mask do not offer any protection longer than 20 minutes in an enclosed environment. I was going to be on the plane for about 4.5 hours.
But before she could explain all that, Ferguson says a couple of Alaska Airlines workers grabbed her carry-on bags and escorted her off the airplane. She says she was met at the gate by an airport police officer who forcefully escorted her to the ticket counter. She says an Alaska Airline ticket agent offered to book another flight in 2 hours if she calmed down. But she refused and left the airport.
I was emotionally violated. I had tremendous stress, a bruise on my arm. And it was beyond belief.
Ferguson is an author who's spent the past 53 years in the Delta Junction area, where she and her husband raised three kids. She believes she was mistreated at the airport and that her rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act were violated. She said Wednesday that she'd talked with a lawyer about the case, but decided against pursuing it. She says, however, Alaska Airlines should revisit its mask policy and ensure treatment of disabled customers complies with the ADA. Spokespersons for both Alaska Airlines and the State Department of Transportation declined to talk about the incident and instead sent written statements. The Transportation Department representative says Ferguson was uncooperative and disruptive. The Alaska Airlines rep says it has refunded the cost of her ticket and launched an internal investigation. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The state is finalizing plans for another 40-mile caribou hunt, and there's concern about more trail and land damage by ATVs along the Steese Highway north of Fairbanks. In August, a two-caribou bag limit hunt drew thousands of hunters on ATVs to the Eagle Summit and 12-mile Summit area, scarring portions of the Bureau of Land Management's Pinnell Mountain Trail, as well as state lands. Numerous people expressed concerns during a Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee meeting last night. While Fish and Game is only authorized to manage wildlife, Karen Brewster maintained the agency also bears responsibility for what happens to the land.
They put out that hunt for so many animals and so many people, and they knew that people were going to come up there. And so to say that they just manage wildlife, I think, is kind of a cop-out.
The State Department of Natural Resources is charged with land management, but the agency's Diana Leinberger said ATV riding is a generally permitted use.
So an ATV going across an area and creating a trail is a generally allowed use. Of course, we understand that this area is susceptible to damage, and that's why we're going to work with ADF&G and BLM and see if we can't do something to mitigate the impact of this particular area.
Regulation is not going to be nearly as effective as peer pressure and education.
State Game Board member Larry Van Dale praised public and interagency efforts to address the problem through cooperation and outreach, but didn't rule out a regulatory fix. The Game Board is not scheduled to consider interior region issues until 2022, but Van Dale said 40-mile hunt regulations could be addressed sooner.
We could limit the number of people that go certain areas, certain times, and so forth. Last thing I wanted to note, though, is that if you guys come up with a solution that has some regulatory component, remember we can do agenda change requests, so it doesn't have to wait 2 or 3 years. So we're open to working with you guys if you think there's something that we can regulate that may help.
Meanwhile, with the winter hunt approaching fast, frozen ground and snow could provide the best protection of hunt area trails and lands. The state anticipates an announcement about the structure and harvest quota for the winter 40-mile caribou hunt in coming days. A lawsuit is seeking to give absentee voters in Alaska a chance to fix mail-in ballot errors that would prevent their votes from being counted. KTOO and Alaska Public Media report that while voters are able to fix ballot mistakes in some municipal elections, Alaska law doesn't provide for a similar process. State law currently requires that voters be notified their ballots were rejected within 60 days of the election results being certified. This year, the target date for certifying the results is November 25th, so voters would not be notified until late January. The lawsuit seeks to require the State Division of Elections to notify voters their ballots were rejected because of a lack of signature or identifying information before the votes are certified and give them a chance to correct it. The filing notes that there will be an unprecedented number of absentee ballots this year and that inexperienced voters are more likely to have their ballots rejected because they make a mistake. The Department of Law has responded to the lawsuit by arguing that there's no justification for the plaintiffs waiting until shortly before the election to challenge the constitutionality of a longstanding law. Anchorage Superior Court Judge Andrew Guidi is scheduled to hear oral arguments in the case this morning. I'm Dan Bross.